Hello, hello. Welcome to Season 4 of the Chicago Techies Podcast, the show that highlights the voices of Chicago innovators and their journeys. This season, we're shining a spotlight on founders, from bootstrap beginnings to bold visions. We're diving into what it really takes to build right here in Chicago. I'm your host, Cecilia Benitez. Thanks for tuning in. Hey, Aide, how are you? Thank you for joining me this week on the Chicago Techies Podcast.
Good. Thanks for having me, Cecilia. I'm excited to do something different with my Friday.
I'm excited to start or to learn more about your journey as a founder and just, you know, about your startup and everything else in between. So why don't we get started with your name, your pronouns, where you're from, and your current role?
Yeah. So my name is Aide Marino. I'm originally, well, my pronouns are she, her, hers. And I'm originally from Mexico City and Chicago. So I was born in Chicago. I grew up in Mexico. I came back here when I was a kid and I've just been here ever since. Can't get out.
Yeah. Nice. Did you grow up in Mexico City too then?
Yeah.
Were you coming back and forth or mostly there?
I just lived there for like 5 years and then I came back and then I would go back and visit. So yeah. Like my family's over there. I went back often when my parents moved back over here.
Yeah.
Just hopping back and forth. But most of my schooling was here.
Okay. Where in Mexico City?
A suburb called Ciudad Satélite. Ooh. It's like, it was like in the 50s. It was like one of the first suburbs of Mexico City. And it was like modeled, like it was like architecturally renowned. They like made the streets really weird. All the streets are circles. And like just a bunch of weird stuff. It's just a weird, weird place. Yeah.
Not sure where that is. I go to Mexico every year to visit my family, and we have some family in Mexico, in Coyoacán. So,
oh, nice.
But that's like in the
awesome
center
area. We're on the other side of the city, up north.
Yeah, nice. Let's chat about your startup. What inspired you to start EasyBot AI? Right, that's what it is.
Yeah. I know the name is kind of generic, but it's a good domain, and it is like our goal is to make website optimization easier for people. So why not? So what inspired it? Well, my friend or my co-founder Griffin inspired it because he was working in experimentation. And so he was thinking about these problems a lot. My other co-founder was building AI systems with like big data that would like process things really quickly and make predictions. And I was in business school. So we all kind of got together just to like talk about this idea he had. And by the end of the dinner, we were like, this is a great idea. Like, does this, like, we couldn't find anything like it that existed. So we're like, I guess we should just make it and see how it goes.
Yeah. And so, okay. And I don't really know anything about website optimization. So can you explain it in simpler terms, like for people that don't quite understand it either?
Yeah.
What exactly does the startup do?
Yeah. So most people have heard of A/B testing. Mm-hmm. And it's this process where people test different versions of their website and see what gets people to buy the most or sign up the most in order to find the one best website, right? They're like trying to just have the best website they can. But we are kind of turning that around because we don't think you should just have one website. Like, you know, clothing is in different sizes, a bunch of things like recommendations on streaming platforms. They show you what you want to see. We think that websites should not be one size fits all. We think that there are many best websites, and that's true. Like mathematically, if you have more options, you can cater to more people and you can sell more. You can convert more. You can get more signups if you show people what speaks to them. So our AI system basically allows you to have a bunch of different things on your website that it shows to different people.
Okay. So who's essentially your customer target? Like, is it just anyone that has a website?
Broadly, sure. Like if somebody with a website and enough traffic, like 10,000 visitors a month or more wants to use it, they can certainly. The people that we're targeting are smaller businesses that are mostly online. So this is because, you know, if your business is mostly online, you really care about your conversion rates. Mm-hmm. Small businesses like 100,000 to less than 1 million visitors a month, for sure. Because those are the businesses that know about A/B testing. They know that it could benefit their business, but it's so tedious and expensive, they don't know if it's worth it. So we provide them with an option that's cheaper and easier, and it works great. And so we're just like, yeah, that's like the sweet spot for us right now.
Yeah, makes sense. And for you, like, so I'm actually curious about your journey into becoming a founder, right? With like, with your friends kind of brainstorming on things, on problems, and then kind of deciding to go this route. Did you always know growing up that you wanted to do something in business or something in like, you know, startup related, or how did this come about for you?
Not really, you know, I kind of just like stumbled into it. So I used to be like a data scientist. I did like data analytics work, and I was working at a nonprofit, and I just got kind of lonely just working on a computer alone, telling people like your findings. So I also had a lot of like family and friends who had their own small businesses who would, you know, you might relate to this also being an immigrant, mm-hmm. you know, your family and friends are like, hey, you have a college degree. Doesn't matter what your degree is in. They're like, can you help me with like my taxes, or can you yep. help me with this or that? And I was like, I don't know anything about these things. So yeah, those two things made me decide to want to go to business school. And I thought I was just going to go and like, I don't know, go back to some sort of analytics work and some company. But then we just got this idea, and it was like, yeah. Well, I'm in business school right now, so I have free time and I can take classes to like learn stuff that I might need to start this business. And yeah, it just kind of happened.
It definitely takes like a certain kind of person to go full in a journey that is like a roller coaster.
Yeah. I mean, and like, I'm extremely lucky and privileged right now because, you know, my partner can make money and mm-hmm. help support us through the chaos of entrepreneurship. So that's yeah. been helpful.
So you all launched recently, right? Like in the last year or two?
About a year ago, yeah.
Okay.
We were building for a year and then we launched last
what
year.
What are some of the challenges that you have been facing, I guess, early on, or even just looking back in the early days of building EasyBot?
Yeah. So I guess initially it was really hard to get like the first customer, obviously, right? Like we're like, okay, we have this data pipeline. We have this machine learning model. It will work, but we need somebody to use it, even though we can't show them anything. We just have to be like, hello, can we install things on your website so that we can prove to ourselves and to you that this works? So that took a little while. Obviously, we had to make the front end. So the main product is AI. But like AI products are like 5% AI and 95% dashboards, right? People need mm-hmm. to be able to see something.
Yeah.
So that was a big struggle. And then once we got the first customer and it did work the way that we wanted it to work, and it like, you know, like our hypotheses were confirmed. We're like, this is awesome. You know, everyone should use this. Then we're just in the classic, you know, startup void where now you have to start building a network and like marketing and letting people know about your solution and like talking to people and learning what resonates with them. And so that's kind of what we've been doing for the last year, just trying to talk to more people, meet more people, introduce. We have to find the early adopters because this is a new way of thinking about your website. You know, there are people who already do A/B testing who are like, this is the only way, you know, I have to do it this way. And there are people who don't believe that there's like a better alternative that's easier, like cheaper, you know, they're like, I don't know. That sounds too good to be true. So we've managed to find some of these early adopters, you know, people who are excited about something new. And once they try it out, usually they're like, yeah, this is great. I want to keep using this. It's totally worth it. It pays for itself. But initially it is hard to get out there.
Yeah.
So this is our year of like trying to market.
Yeah. And with those early adopters, are you seeing that they are giving any feedback, you know, about that is shaping the product in some way or another?
Yeah. So like with most startups, there's useful feedback and there's unuseful feedback. Mm-hmm. So we've gotten some really good, and then there's like good feedback that isn't useful, right? Like there's good feedback, like this works great, you know, thanks. And we're glad that they're realizing that it works great. Some of our best feedback has been regarding the user interface. So like we want this tool to be something that a stranger can sign up for on the website, install it, use it, and see all of the results. And so we're trying to make the dashboards convey as much information as possible for the users. However, it's just hard. People want to see different things. So we do get a lot of like, oh, can we see this kind of thing? Can we dig into the data this way? And so a lot of those requests are like hit or miss, because the people who use our platform are, by definition, because we want it to be low, like low tech, easy for anyone to use. They're not super, like, they're not engineers usually, or they're not like data scientists, right? So it's so easy for them to ask a question that's either like something you can build in 5 minutes or something that would take like a PhD in 10 years and a team of like 10 people to build, you know? And so like, it's funny when we get requests like that, where it's like one or the other.
I bet. So, okay. So two questions following that. For anyone, I guess, any of the smaller, small business users that might not necessarily be as technical, how accessible is it for them to use? Like, is it something that they just have to download and add it to their website, and then they're able to see, you know, analytics and the dashboards? Or how complex is it for any business that is thinking about, you know, using the product?
Yeah, so it's pretty easy. For a small business owner that has a website and doesn't have like a full-time coder or engineer that works on their website, they can install it like you would install Google Analytics. Mm-hmm. So kind of, you know, you do have to copy and paste some code, but it's pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
And then we have a visual editor for these people so that they can open up their website. They open up the visual editor, which like highlights the things that they click on. They can see the code of the thing that they're clicking on and change something and see what that looks like. And then they can save that change if they want to try it out and test it. So we've tried to make it super easy for them. Of course, it varies by website. Like, they have questions like, where do I put this? You know, I pasted it in the wrong place and it didn't work. Like, we talk to them all and we try and like help them onboard. Yeah. But once they set up their experiments and see it start working, it's like so great, because they don't have to lift another finger. Like, they just have, you know, instead of one website, they have 30 websites that cater to different people, and they can see the value that that's bringing.
Yeah. And for some, and this is just my curiosity, but for something like this, how do you work with a business model? Like, do you have a subscription base, or is this like a one-time fee that they pay, or like, how does that work for y'all?
We have a subscription. So we basically just train AI models that predict what people want to see on your website. So you just pay monthly for the model, and the amount of data that we're processing is basically how much our training costs. So we just charge for traffic. So the small businesses can pay $100, $200 a month. Larger businesses can pay $1,000 or $2,000. It scales.
Yeah.
And, you know, it can scale if your business grows or shrinks.
For sure. Cool. Now, I'm curious about the funding part. obviously, like, you know, when most founders start something, a lot of the times everything is bootstrapped before, you know, any other institutional capital can come in. So where are you all on your journey for just, you know, scaling and thinking about, are you all thinking about funding in the future, or how are you approaching that?
Yeah. So initially when we had the idea, we were like, this is a great idea. You know, we should get funding. And then everyone's like, well, you know, you're a first-time founder, like, cool, you know, cool idea. But like, first, you know, first start a business and like get a customer and do everything. And then we'll consider giving you money. And it's like, okay, well, like, I'm not going to need money then, but okay. So we did get some money from friends and family so that we could work on this full time or part time and just like build it out and make sure that it worked. Mm-hmm. We didn't spend it all. So it's good to have a little bit of just in case money in the bank. But right now we're just kind of bootstrapped. We're making a bit more money than we're spending. We're trying to grow organically. Part of the reason that we did this and we didn't try really hard to get funding earlier this year is because I had a baby. And so we were like, we're going to need to go slow for a while, you know, like it's going to be a slow year, but we're still going to move forward. And we have. We might be looking for funding soon. It's kind of feeling like it's almost time.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like you're having some pretty good traction so far. So nice. And then obviously you are all based here in Chicago. I actually had the pleasure of working with Griffin not too long ago, a few years ago. So we didn't quite work in the same team, but he went through my team for onboarding at Innova. But
nice.
You're all based here. I'm curious about all the resources that you've used, if you were part of any accelerators or just incubators, or how are you utilizing Chicago, as a resource?
Yeah. So obviously, since I was in business school, I was at Chicago Booth when we had the idea. So we did the New Venture Challenge, and this was like the idea phase. I think we had just gotten our first customer and like weren't yet, didn't prove yet that it worked, but we were like, it's gonna work. So we learned a lot about just the, pitching and like business models and scalability and financial models and all of that, U Chicago stuff. We thought about joining other accelerators after that, but because they offer usually a token amount of money for a decent amount of equity, and then their main offering is like all of the connections they can give you. And we basically were able to get a similar amount of money from our friends and family, and weren't sure that we wanted to go through another accelerator.
Yeah.
So we didn't. I don't know if that was a good thing or a bad thing, but some of the resources in Chicago that we have found extremely valuable are like just in the last like 2 or 3 years, there's been an explosion in like tech events in Chicago, just mm-hmm. like meetups for different kinds of industries, like different demographic based meetups, different all sorts of events. And those have been really nice to go to because you just get to meet people in the community mm-hmm. and you get to show up and they get to see you, month after month doing the same thing and working on stuff, and they learn about your business and you. Yeah. It's very satisfying. And I'm not a huge fan of being online as a presence more so than in person. Like I love being in person. So I'm glad that there's now, even compared to a few years ago, there's so many more things to do in Chicago.
For sure.
That has been really nice and helpful.
Yeah. We got to get you all to come share and present EasyBot at 1 Million Cups Chicago. It's
pretty cool
founder community. So you all should think about it. Well, I'm just curious now about just looking ahead. What are you all trying to accomplish in the next year or so? Are you thinking about strategic partnerships, product expansion, or what kind of growth are you all hoping for the near future?
Yeah. So right now, being the small team, we want to have more case studies, more legitimacy, and more presence online so that people can find us and believe in what we're selling, basically. We want to find a bunch of early adopters so they can convince people to be the slightly less early adopters. What that looks like is we are planning strategic partnerships with VCs because they have small, lean teams that are tech savvy and are growing quickly. Like they're perfect for mm-hmm. something like EasyBot. One of our biggest customers is a startup that has been growing really quickly. And so they love it because it's so just easy and effective and not hard to use. So that's one plan that we have. Another thing that we've been doing is talking to businesses that do conversion rate optimization as a service. Mm-hmm. So they usually use a bunch of A/B testing tools and do A/B testing. And there are some AI tools in the space, but our tool allows them to give their customers more conversions without having to do all of the math, without having to, explain what's going on. So those people have also been interested in using EasyBot, but it's hit or miss. Some of them really just want to do it the old fashioned way. But yeah, those are our two big initiatives for getting more of those. I mean, we're almost like in beta just because like we aren't really sure which features people like the most. We don't know what kinds of people want this or that. You know, we're just continuously iterating on our dashboards. You know, the models work great. You just AI, you just tell it to get, you know, optimized for clicks or signups or whatever, and it does that. But the thing that people see is, you know, a constant work in progress.
How are you finding those customers or the early adopters? Like, are you going to small businesses, talking to small businesses, or are you just kind of like doing some cold outreach? Like, what's your approach?
A little bit of all of it, but mostly, so we were doing some cold outreach to ideal customers, like medium-sized e-commerce stores, but I hate being reached out to cold by people, and I'm sure everyone else does. And all of our sales, like, we've literally gotten no sales from cold outreach, just like some chats and people being like, yeah, sure, whatever. But we've gotten inbound. Like, people will reach out and be like, oh, I ran into your product on your website. Can you tell me about it? And then they're like, yeah, I want to use it. So instead, and they're all from LinkedIn. Like, the experimentation people are all on LinkedIn. So we've just been, you know, trying to post more informational stuff. We have a bunch of blog posts that we have to, like, try and help people learn what to do on their websites. We have a LinkedIn presence that's currently getting better. We're planning a lot of just posting schedules and content strategy stuff to just try and get out there and grow our networks and be more visible. That way, the people who are ready for us, those early adopters, those people who want something, you know, easy and effective, they can find us.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it sounds like you are getting ready to do a lot of different things. And you mentioned earlier, you know, that you had to take a little bit of a breath because you became a parent. So let's dig a little deeper there. I'm curious about your journey, you know, as, you know, a mom in tech and now a founder. Those are very difficult, I hear, when you are a new parent and trying to build a new company off the ground and get it running. So can you share essentially what's that been like from the moment that you literally got pregnant to to now?
Yeah. I mean, being pregnant was like mildly, you know, like, it's uncomfortable, but like, you still have autonomy over your like schedule and life, you know, like you gotta go to physical therapy and like walk a lot and, you know, make sure you're taking care of yourself, but you can set your own schedule. So that wasn't terrible, but having a baby is a completely different story. I've been making jokes about like, I feel like I've gotten way more productive because whenever I have like a spare moment, I just like get things done super fast, but I have way less time to do them. So it's like, am I doing better or worse? I don't know. I am extremely lucky though. Like, my dad moved in to our basement and like made himself a little apartment down there, and he's been helping out, and, you know, my partner helps out. So, you know, we've gotten it together, I think. I kind of feel like a real person again. Like, I can plan stuff and do things. Maybe I'll have like a dinner party at some point soon. Like, I can do stuff again.
Yeah.
But barely.
And what has been your experience just in tech in general as a woman? You know, from when you became when you had your first role, like, as a data scientist, was that your first role right out of college?
I was working at a startup right out of college, and then I was working at a big data consulting firm, and then at a nonprofit doing data science stuff. So I've kind of hopped around a little bit in like titles, but mostly it has been like technical expertise, I guess, and in tech. Yeah.
Would you say your journey kind of has been pretty like neutral? Has it been difficult? Like, I mean, everybody has different experiences in tech, but I'm curious, like, being the only woman in the room, or, you know, just.
Yeah. I don't know. It's definitely been odd. I'm kind of used to being the only woman in the room because I have always really liked math and science and things like that. So in high school and stuff, it was a lot of male heavy classes and extracurriculars and work. I mean, so I was hired once and there were 10 people hired and I was the only woman. And like, it's just, I don't know. It's not like tangibly awkward, but it is kind of awkward, you know, like it, you just feel a little left out. I think I was also the only person of color. Like, I know I'm like very light skinned, but it was just like 9 white guys and me. But that's, that's odd. Definitely uncomfortable. I think being a founder is like better and worse. Better because I feel like I can like create a safer space for all kinds of people and like value people based on their contributions. But I'm not like, I haven't hired anybody yet. So this is all like theoretical. But it's also worse because like you're a founder. Like I can see when my co-founders talk to people, especially men, like they're taken a lot more seriously than I am.
Yeah.
And it's like, but why? Like, so it goes both ways, I guess. You know, there's there's a big funding gap. There's a lot of stuff that makes it harder. Not to mention just being like an immigrant and coming from a community where nobody knows anything about like entrepreneurship in terms of like, or tech or things like that. That's it's a bit of a struggle. But it's nice. It's uplifting to be like doing this and be able to, I don't know, like hopefully inspire somebody.
No, and I think actually the fact that you all are like a diverse team, right? Like it's living proof that you are all kind of building something together and different backgrounds, different perspectives, and you know, you being the woman of the team, and offering a different perspective and being able to offer that welcoming space for others, like I think that's huge. I'm curious how you prepared yourself essentially to become a founder, to step into that new adventure. Did you receive any advice from others that shaped that mentality as you took on this challenge?
Yeah. I mean, you know, one thing that kind of kills me, but is true, is that I do feel like getting an MBA was a big confidence booster. Like I know a lot of founders, most of them are white men who did not get an MBA or like don't have any sort of formal education in business. And I feel like they get taken seriously without it. And I know like part of this is like self-reinforcing from society. I would not have believed that I knew enough to run a business until I got the piece of paper that said that I did. And then I was like, okay, you know, I'm going to have this piece of paper. Like I can do it, you know? So, you know, I feel kind of mixed feelings about that because I probably would have been able to do it without that. But also it's really nice to have. And I think it helps when, you know, people want to, you know, doubt me or like ask like, oh, well, why? You know, why are you qualified to do this or whatever? I can be like, well, I have qualifications, literal ones.
No, I think that's super important and super fair. I actually was having a conversation with one of the researchers at my job at WebBusiness Chicago about how they approach research and how they approach, especially when it comes to founder experiences and founder research. So she actually was asking me like if I thought that they should be looking into something more when it comes to sourcing the companies that we potentially want to work with, you know, or bring to Chicago. And, you know, I actually, what you said about men that don't always have the credentials, like the MBA sometimes get taken more seriously than women. I think there's a lot of truth to that. I do, however, do think that that kind of gets a little bit challenged once they reach Series A and Series B. Because I think you are no longer running a startup. You know, now you're running a scaling business. You're mm-hmm. getting to another growth stage that is not the same in as running the startup, you know, early on. So I do see that there is a shift of a CEO change usually mm-hmm. at that stage. And for that, like I think I would recommend to founders to, as you know, as they grow their business, as they grow their startup, like they should be growing with it, and they should be aiming to get better credentials. They should be aiming to prepare themselves to run a scaling business if they don't want to be replaced later on. Because that is a huge deal that not everybody really thinks about. They just think that they're always going to be the founder and the CEO of the company, but that's not always the case. For sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I've had that conversation with my co-founders once or twice where it was like, oh, you know, like, why are we doing this or that? Or like, I would think that we should do blah, blah, blah. And it's like, well, actually, like if you learn about like accounting or if you learn about tax, mm-hmm. you know, the way that the taxes land on the company or whatever, you know, you'll realize this or that. And so it's funny that like they'll get more. They seem more legitimate to some people because they're men. And then I'm just there in the background, like, you guys should go to business school so you can understand why we're doing these things the way we're doing them.
Like, oh. I'm glad they have you. it's things that sometimes people miss. It's especially founders that are like excited and just want to continue to grow and make money and you know, be excited that their ideas worked. But at the end of the day, like you're running a business and you are going to have to answer to like investors later on, you're going to be answering to a board. You are going to be expected to do a 10 time return in like the first 10 years if possible. Like, you know, there's things that are scarier that come with that you have to learn and think about as you grow. And essentially like going to business school is a great idea. I mean, not always. But for the most part, it can be very helpful to get a course or two in your belt as you scale. Anyway, that's thank you for entertaining that. I was very curious. I think me also being a parent, my life has changed drastically with scheduling. Now, and my kids are now in preschool, so now I have to do drop offs. Yeah, and like
still pick-ups. Though, the freedom.
yes, a little bit more freedom, but then because they're still kind of like in the half program, like I still have to get out of work. Have to get out of work at noon to go pick them up and then drop them off at home to get more childcare for me to finish the school day or my day. So, but it can be really challenging, and I can't even imagine running a company with children too. But I'm sure it's very difficult, and I've seen many many women do it, and I'm just really proud that proud of the women that do it. So congrats.
Thank you. I say it's a blessing and a curse, you know, like I'm my own boss. So like, how much time do I really have?
Yeah. Yeah. But then you are carrying that load, right? Like you're carrying like the company load and you're carrying like the family load. So I'm sure it can get, it can be a lot sometimes. So in that realm, how do you manage your mind? Like, how do you stay sane?
I mean, honestly, I feel like before I had the baby, it was a lot harder to like, you know, like every hour of every day, I was like, I could work or I could, mm-hmm. you know, do something else. And it was hard to know what that limit was. Whereas now I feel like it's a lot easier to just turn on and off, you know, like, oh, the baby goes to sleep. I'm clearly going to work. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm just waiting for the baby to go to sleep or for my husband to get home or something so that I can do X, Y, Z. But like, I'm not going to do it when he's, you know, when I'm hanging out with him.
Yeah.
So it's become easier in some of those senses, especially now. Like, I mean, he's only 4 months old. So just in the last like month or two, it's been easier to plan like, okay, like, you know, my dad's going to watch him for a certain amount of time so I can get stuff done. And then there's scheduling things, you know, like physical therapy, emotional therapy, all sorts of other things throughout the day. So I feel like it's become a lot easier because priorities are so much clearer. Like I need to recover from pregnancy. I need mm-hmm. to, you know, take care of my kids, and then I need to work. And so it's like, easier to manage, I think, emotionally than before. But also harder because I don't have as much time. So like I catch myself being ambitious the way that like last year I might have tried, like, oh, I'm gonna do this and this and this, and I'm gonna like go to events, and then I'm gonna stay up late and do this, and I'm gonna wake up early, and it's like, oh no, like I cannot do all of those things. I have to pick something.
I know firsthand about all of that. Especially, I mean, one that things to be grateful for is that family support that you have, you know, your parents, your dad being there, and then your partner obviously being very involved. I can't really do events anymore, especially when the children are with me. You know, like I have to, you know, I have to be home. I want to be with my kids. Like, I don't want to be at an event if I don't have to be. But it's definitely, your life definitely changes a lot. But let's get back to EasyBot. I want to talk a little bit more just to go up about the future and kind of what you're excited about, and what's next. And what's, you know, what's in your radar, I guess, for the organization itself, or for just your growing your team, you know, what are you excited about?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the dream, the like North Star that we talk about and think about a lot, is we want EasyBot to be the sort of AI tool that somebody can start their online store, you know, make their website, or have somebody make their website, and then install EasyBot, and EasyBot will tell them, like, hey, you have a bakery? You should do this, this, and this, because our customer, like our other bakery customers, have seen the most conversions from this. So, you know, right now we're early, and we don't have that many customers, but we want to cater to the small businesses, because one, they don't have access to tools like this. And if we get enough of them, then we can build an even better tool that can predict for them what will work before we collect data and train a model on their website. So instead of them having to wait a few weeks to see results, they would have the results immediately and it would work great. That's what we're dreaming of building for people. But we need, you know, a lot more customers to start.
Well, doing for that. Anyone that is out there listening and might be interested in connecting with you or your team, like, what's the best way for them to get involved or to reach out?
Probably the best way would be to message me on LinkedIn, and say that they heard me on a podcast. They could also try emailing me my name at easybot.ai, but it's like such a generic and obvious email that there's a lot of trash in there that I'm aggressively filtering out. So yeah, put those keywords in there. Bonus points if they share their website, like if they're like, hello, I would like to use you, this is my website, I'm more likely to find it than if they're like, do you want to scale your team, we have a team of blah 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 that will help you, or whatever.
And I'll make, I mean, if you're open to it, I can also put your email on the show notes and like the website and everything. So, but just to wrap us up, like, let's leave the audience with some parting advice. So for anyone that is crazy enough to think they can do everything, become a founder, become all the things. No, I'm just kidding. But just any piece of advice that you want to leave out the audience, or just, you know, founders, new parents, whatever parting advice you'd like to share.
Honestly, I feel like this applies both to pregnancies, to websites, and to just life decisions. And it's really like one size does not fit all. So like throughout, you know, my pregnancy, I was getting advice that was for other people, not for me. Like with the business, I get a bunch of advice that's like for other people. Like people are used to giving really generic advice before they really get to know you and your situation. And so you just have to remember that you are an individual. You're not like the average person in every single way. And the advice that works for most people is probably not the advice that works for you. You got to figure out what applies to you and what doesn't in, you know, for your business, for your life, for your health, like all of it.
Yeah, that's great. Well, thank you, Aide, for joining me this week. Super excited to just get to know you a little bit more, and best of luck with EasyBot, and say hi to Griffin for me.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you so much for having me. This was really fun.
Yeah.
And I'm excited to listen to your other podcast too.
Yeah, please do, and feel free to share.
I will, absolutely.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Chicago Techies Podcast. If you enjoy listening, don't forget to subscribe, share, and leave a review on iTunes. Let's continue the conversation on social media. We are at Chicago Techies on all social media platforms. Thank you again, and we'll see you next time.